Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Lovely to have you with us on a Friday. We've made it through another week, ladies and gentlemen, and we're more than a little happy about that. It is the end of the month. When we come to you on Monday, it'll be a new month, so it's very nice to have you here. Thank you for spending time with us and making us part of your day. We would love for you to become engaged in our conversation. It'll be quite a conversation this morning. You can do so by going to panel. Writing to panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce that panel to you so you can know who you're writing to. We are pleased that WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joseph. I take it you can hear me.
I can hear you. You are loud and clear and from an undisclosed location.
Right.
That we'll probably...
We'll give you a hint. If you can hear Murray the dog, you know where that undisclosed location is.
It's an undisclosed location that you can probably figure out, right?
Yeah, right. Now, there is one thing I must say. It's so exciting, the news about Harry Belafonte. I know you're going to talk about that a little.
I have the sheet in my hand. Let me introduce everybody, and then we'll get to that real quick.
Yeah.
Cool. So Alan is here, and we also welcome political consultant Libby Post.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Wonderful to have you here. Thank you for filling in at the last minute. I appreciate it. And
I'm like water. I can go anywhere.
I know. You're very talented, and we appreciate you being here. Also, we are thrilled to have former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck with us because, we'll talk about your situation in a few minutes because you got a lot going on.
And
we'll talk about what you're up to.
Thanks.
In a second. So real quick for the folks who are interested in this and everyone, and that means everybody, by the way, Harry Belafonte, the legendary Harry Belafonte, singer, songwriter, actor, social activist. You know, he was the first artist ever to sell a million albums.
Is that right?
Yeah. First ever to sell a million albums.
Great.
Harry Belafonte is going to be in conversation with our own Alan Chartok on Saturday, November 11th at 7:30 at the Egg. And we have a pair of tickets for you. And for $150, you get a pair of tickets and you get to go see two living legends. Two living legends on one stage.
Ah, stop it.
All right. Two living legends on one stage, and you will you'll have a great time. So we asked for a pledge of $150, and Saturday, November 11th, 7:30. These are going to go very quickly. We have a limited number. I think we're still putting the numbers on them, but we have a limited number of tickets. They're going to go very, very quickly. All of this, by the way, and this is where I will cue Alan to go into.
Rapture.
Yes, go into your rapture to do what you do best, which is to tell people of why we're doing this. But this is all for the lockbox prior to the fund drive that begins October 16th. Go, Alan.
Well, look, Joe, before we can do anything else, we have to support the radio station. We have to make sure that it's going to survive, that it's going to go. It's never easy. I think somebody told me the other day that in terms of all the money we have, it doesn't add up to anywhere near anywhere near the money you would need to run the radio station for a year.
Right.
So we have to do this, and that means if people love the station, or if they listen to the station, or if they love to hate listening to the station, whatever it is, we have to keep this thing going. So we do these incredible things, the Capital Steps. I understand there are a couple of tickets left to that, but not many. Harry Belafonte doing this wonderful thing. You know, he was a resident of our area for a long time, and he's a great man. I mean, he is American history, you know, both as a performer, as an activist, he's the best of the best. It's going to be a fascinating time to talk to him. We'll do it, and people will say, I was there. And somebody will say, Daddy, were you there when Harry Belafonte talked to WAMC? Were you live there? And somebody will say, yes.
Hopefully they don't have to wait that while. They'll just remember right away that they were there.
So there you go. Well, as you know, the Weavers at Carnegie Hall had 6,000 people who could get into that hall, and 600,000 people say they were there. So So there you are. It is a magnificent gesture on Harry's part, on the Egg Peter Lesser, wonderful man,
yes,
who's arranged so much of this. And so, everybody, let's get it now. I said to Roselle, she heard this morning we were doing this, and she said, well, they'll be gone today. And I think she's probably right.
Pair of tickets, An Evening with Harry Belafonte in Conversation with Alan, Saturday, November 11th at 7:30 at The Egg, The Egg. And that is in Albany, so make your plans. The actual tickets will be sent to you in the mail, so that'll happen. But get your, and again, all going, as Alan mentioned, all going to the Lockbox, all going to, hopefully, is a very, very short drive. And we'll get there, but we need to do this, and... You can do so by going to WAMC.org. There is a link right there that says support WAMC. You just put right on it for the Lockbox, and it'll bring you right to where you need to be. And there's a drop-down menu that you can get the tickets for Harry Belafonte.
Hey, Joe, do you know how much money is left to go in the Lockbox to get to that $500,000 mark?
I bet you by the 9:30 break, I will have the latest up-to-date number right here on this console.
Great, because it's never going to be easy, that's for sure.
It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, it's amazing that when you...
Right.
Yes, because the front office is actually listening. Well, that's great.
Sometimes.
And then,
most
you're
of
right.
The time.
Yeah.
All the
they're
time.
They're amazing.
You're right. And if they're not listening, it's because they're answering all the phone calls.
That's right.
And
right.
That's good.
True.
800-323-9262. And just press zero, and they'll take care of you. But the easiest way to do it is WAMC.org. Okay, so that is item number one. We still have time for a show. Now, Judith Enck, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning, Joe.
So we have been talking all week about the situation going on in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. You joined us last Friday and talked about the severity of that situation as we were just on the cusp of seeing the devastation that has unfolded. So we're thrilled you're here today, but we also have to tell people that you probably your last visit here for a little while. So tell people what you'll be doing and what your new gig is.
Yeah. So I mean, like I think many of your listeners, I am incredibly concerned and worried about this humanitarian crisis unfolding before our eyes in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And it seems to be getting worse by the day. And I would love to talk about the inadequacy of the Trump administration's response. I am calling this Trump's Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do want to sneak in just a little bit of time on how climate change is linked to stronger hurricanes, because we have to remember that. But recently, the governor of the U.S. Virgin Islands, Governor Kenneth Mapp, who I worked a bit with when I was at the EPA, the EPA Region 2 that I oversaw included New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And I did a lot of work in the Caribbean because the environmental problems there are so severe. So I got to know Governor Mapp a little bit. We didn't overlap a lot, but after the first hurricane hit U.S. Virgin Islands, he called me and asked if I would go down and help them with the myriad of environmental problems facing their islands post-hurricane. And the first pitch was, would I come down for 3 months, which I said I could not do 3 months, and help in figuring out how they could rebuild. For instance, how do you do solar and more sustainable building practices? And then the assignment shifted after the second hurricane hit, and I was called by the environmental commissioner, who was terrific, and she asked me to come and help with more of the day-to-day response. They don't have drinking water. Their sewage treatment plants are not working. They won't have electricity until Christmas, and I think that's actually optimistic. I'm going to work on figuring out how to deal with all of the debris on the island. So I did some of this during Hurricane Sandy when I was at the EPA, and I just feel like this is a wonderful opportunity to help. So I'm hopping 3 flights starting tonight, and I will land in St. Thomas tomorrow. I probably won't have much internet or cell phone connectivity. However, I'll be tweeting. I think I can get to a hotspot every night. So follow me on Twitter, ENCKJ, and I will post pictures. and, you know, to just lend a hand and do what I can.
Do you know, is there a sense as to what is, I mean, we're all seeing the images, we're all seeing the pictures. I'm going to make a leap here and say that you probably know more than most people as to what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it adequately being reported as to what is happening? You have referred to it as a humanitarian crisis.
Yeah.
As to what level that is and where we are right now?
I think it has improved literally in the last 2 days in the reporting on Puerto Rico. I think the reporting on the U.S. Virgin Islands is inadequate. Jeremy Peters from the New York Times had a very good article yesterday. And what I'm told from people on the ground is the horrible images we're seeing out of Puerto Rico are equally, if not worse, in the U.S. Virgin Islands. 110,000 people live in the U.S. Virgin Islands. 3.5 million people live in Puerto Rico. So I completely understand why they're, and I support the focus on Puerto Rico. But people are desperate. I saw the CNN report yesterday on the island of Vieques,
yes,
which is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I happen to spend a lot of time there because people may recall that for 60 years that was a bombing range. That's
right,
where the United States and NATO bombed practice. They did bomb practice for 60 years, stopped about 12 years ago. Two-thirds of that island is a federal Superfund site. And we've been working with the Navy to remove the unexploded ordnance. So that, I know Vieques as well. I knew some of the people that were in the CNN report, and they are really desperate. And they're running out of water. They may have already run out of water. There is civil unrest, and it literally gets worse by the hour.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I know Alan and I and Teresa, we were talking about this yesterday about this, or 2 days ago, I guess, this idea of this being President Trump's Katrina. I will admit, I don't know exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of,
I can explain it.
Okay,
yeah.
Good, excellent. In the sense of, I mean, I understand, of course, what the connotation is, but how you come to, of what, because it is a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison. Is that true or not?
Not really.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I mean, Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands are part of the United States.
So let me ask
mm-hmm.
a direct question,
yep.
Which is, what did he screw up?
A couple things. He did not pre-position resources in the islands. We had lots of advance warning that these storms were coming. And when you're dealing with a hurricane, you have to respond rapidly. You have to put systems in place. We did that with Sandy. That didn't happen here. I heard a media report that the Pentagon was waiting for direction from the White House. They never got it. The White House said they assumed the Pentagon was gearing up. There was a military presence in New York and New Jersey during Sandy, and it was welcomed. So,
what about during Irma and Harvey?
In the Caribbean? Or Texas?
Well, I mean,
and
meaning because my understanding of some of the criticism that the president has been receiving is that there has been much more attention mm-hmm. on the federal level paid to and in preparation to both Texas and Florida. So my question is, all of the things that you said that we should have had in place militarily with the Pentagon, were those in place with Irma and Harvey?
In Texas and Florida, yes.
Okay.
But not in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And there is, I will admit, the governments in the Caribbean are not as sophisticated. I don't want to offend anyone, but they're not as well-resourced and sophisticated on emergency response. But we've known that for years. I think there's been a difference between the response, and not only from the Trump administration, but also in donor giving. And that may be fatigue. But a lot of people donated money for Texas and Florida, and not that much in the Caribbean.
Allow me to be Captain Obvious here for a moment. when you talk about this coming through in the Caribbean, which is a great point, that both of those storms have already hit those areas prior to Maria coming. So so you this will be the third time that they were there. So they already had.
It was mostly impacted Irma and Maria.
Right.
Harvey.
Harvey went off. Off, but right. We had Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands had direct hits of a Category 4 and a Category 5 hurricane all within 8 or 9 days of each other. That is unprecedented. And I would say that even today, with all we know, the federal response is completely inadequate.
You know, I would say that this is another example of environmental racism, but in a different way. Usually environmental racism is the oil trains in Albany running through the poor neighborhoods or the Antrus plant. This is an environmental crisis, a climate crisis, and these are black and brown people. And we all know how this president responds to black and brown people. He totally ignores them and he doesn't care. And I don't even know if he knew Puerto Rico was a territory. There was some question about that and the Virgin Islands. And so, you know, to me, this is another example of this administration's desire to make sure that black and brown people who are not white, do not get the services that they deserve and they need. These are U.S. citizens.
I'm going to hold you right there. We're going to come back to the conversation. We have to take a break. We'll be right back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Lovely to have you with us. We are talking to Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Judith Enck, and we welcome your letters. We have a few of those. We'll get to those in a moment. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. I just want to finish up on our conversation as we left Libby talking about this in some terms of environmental racism. I was interested in your both Alan's take and Judith's take on that assertion. Alan?
Well, no question that he's been not where he should be on this. There are a lot of things. There was one comment made. Well, maybe he doesn't know about what the citizenship of Puerto Ricans are. But you know, he did spend time there, and as we've been reading lately, he is a guy who had a project, a Puerto Rican golf club that didn't do well.
And he defaulted on his bonds.
Right.
So we have to assume that maybe there's a little payback here. Who knows with him? You know, he's a wild man when it comes to getting even with people. So it is possible that that's what's going on here. I think he knows full well who Puerto Ricans are.
Well, I mean, I guess the criticism was that if he knew that it was a U.S. territory. Yes, I mean, that was the criticism, especially also, well, in addition to the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Well,
Judith?
Well, half of Americans don't know that Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands are part of America. I think the fact that these are black and brown people play a role. These are low-income communities, very high poverty rate in both territories. Also, they don't have U.S. senators. They have delegates who can't vote on the floor of Congress. And when I worked on issues related to Puerto Rico, I was always trying to cajole the New York delegation in Florida and Illinois, because that's where many Puerto Ricans have relocated. And I will say that Senator Gillibrand and Senator Schumer have historically been extremely helpful on these issues. I think there are over 1 million Puerto Ricans living in New York City. But, you know, when you don't have any political influence, that's also a huge factor here. But here we are, and people will die because of the federal response. The General Honoré, who was involved in Katrina response, was on NPR yesterday saying, now that the Trump administration is sending military assets and resources, they're not sending enough. It's not nearly, it's like 10% of what is needed. So we're still in the middle of this, and this is a mess.
And they're trying to spin it as, hey, we're doing a good job. You know, it's like, you're doing a hell of a job, Brownie.
Yes.
You know, and they're, one of the guys, I think it's this Bossert, This Homeland Security advisor actually questioned the coverage of the news media. And, you know, you can't question when there's a picture.
Right. Thank goodness Bill Weir from CNN is down there, and he got over to Vieques yesterday. He's a very dramatic reporter, but I'm happy that he's on the ground. I do want to mention the acting head of Homeland Security, because the General Kelly is over in the White House. So there's an acting head of his old agency, Aline Duke, and she's quoted in an AP story this morning. The relief effort is under control in Puerto Rico. It is really a good news story in terms of our ability to reach people. Are you kidding
right.
me?
Right.
Do they think we don't watch media reports?
It's like, hey, we're doing a good job. Well, oh, no. Hey, we're doing our job. Give me props for doing my job. Well, I'm sorry. That's what you're supposed to be doing, and you should have been doing it, 5 days ago,
ago. And there is, it can be argued that they're doing their job.
A little late.
Yeah.
But they're doing it so inadequately.
Right.
I saw the Sandy response. This doesn't match it. And the two governors are in a really awkward spot, because you remember President Trump keeps saying, oh, the governor is thanking me. He's praising
me.
Well,
what are they going to do?
Yeah, they have to, because
right.
they're so
right.
dependent. And so there's definitely a role for the local government there. The communities are trying to do what they can, community leaders. But when you haven't eaten in a few days, if you don't have water, you know, it's hard to rally your neighbors.
And their reluctance, I think it's called the Smith Act. Is that what it's called?
The Jones Act.
Smith
yeah.
Jones.
Yeah.
Their reluctance.
There is a big difference.
Yes, I know. But their inaction on that has just quadrupled the problems.
Yeah, Libby, explain what the Jones Act is.
I'm really not sure. All I can figure out is that if you're not an American ship made in America, whether you're under another country's flag or not, because there are ships under other countries' flags that come up
Panama.
To the Port of Albany,
Panama,
you know?
Right?
Yeah. You can't go into a U.S. port. You can't go from one U.S. port to another U.S. port.
A little revision.
Okay, fine.
The Jones Act is to deliver products to Puerto Rico, your ship has to be flying an American flag.
Okay.
So that increases the cost by about 14%. Interestingly, that's not in effect for the U.S. Virgin Islands, just Puerto Rico. It was established 100 years ago to deal with pirates on the open seas, which is no longer a problem. And a few days ago,
not here,
as far as I know, or there is a few days ago, you know, this is where I love they say it out loud. A few days ago, a reporter asked the president, why aren't you getting rid of the Jones Act to make it easier to ship items in cheaper? And he said, well, people in the shipping industry like the Jones Act. So I'm not going
right.
to do that.
And I'm not going to interfere with their profit margin.
Right.
Doesn't matter. It's
so,
profits over people.
Yeah. So yesterday, I think they lifted it for Puerto Rico for mm-hmm. a short period
a
of
very
time.
Very short period
10
of time.
10 days.
Yeah.
10 days.
That's
it. Yeah.
It's not going to be enough.
I hope somebody's gone and looked up contributions from the ship owners to the Trump campaign.
Well, also, Judith, that this whole idea, and then I want to get to the climate change part of this,
thank
and
you.
Then we'll move mm-hmm. on to some other stuff, because we do have a lot of letters,
yes,
too.
Yes, I know.
But we've been hearing a lot about the shipping containers of what's been getting in, and then not having the infrastructure to actually get it to the people. This is also where the planning comes in.
Yeah.
This is where the system that was in place, both in the Virgin Islands, but especially in Puerto Rico, has crumbled, where you would expect the military then to come in and take over that response. And this is what has been so desperately slow and inadequate.
Yeah, there are, you know, donated goods sitting in the port of San Juan. There's a major gasoline shortage. And so there's no gas for the trucks. And also the truck drivers can't get to the port. And it's you know, the military could sweep in and they could start distribution if they can show up with gasoline.
And the idea of paying money for two small bags of ice, which end up melting, you know, that was another part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, it's people don't have refrigeration. They don't have sewage treatment. If you're on insulin, that needs to be refrigerated.
Right.
People are not getting dialysis treatment. The Trump administration put out some numbers on hospitals that are open and functioning, but reporters on the ground say that's not true. You know, for quite a while, we were worried that there would be a terrible, attack in the United States, a terrorist attack or something like that. And we were concerned that the president wouldn't have credibility when he spoke to the American people. It's here now. He is not credible on this issue. You cannot spin your way out of this when we have the photographs and the facts.
And this is a terrorist attack in another way, you know, that is testing and taxing this administration. You know, was it ISIS that did this? No, it was ourselves. We did this because of climate change. You can't deny these superstorms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's our own domestic terrorism, in a sense, that we've created this, and now we're going to pull out of Paris, and we're not going to do anything, and we're going to let the shippers have their way, and let the oil companies and the Koch brothers and the Mercers have their way.
Yeah.
And there'll be one more storm.
Yeah, Libby, you're absolutely right. So the connection with climate change is the warmer the water temperature is in the Atlantic or the Caribbean, the warmer the water temperature is, the more intense the storm is. So we can't say that climate change causes hurricanes, but it makes them ferocious. And then secondly, when polar ice caps melt so far away, it's resulting in sea level rise. So in southern Florida, sea level rise is up a foot and just in the last 10 years. And so with sea level rise, when you have storm surge, the surge is much more damaging in coastal communities. And this is settled science. And so to be living... So in fairness, the Trump administration has only been in for 8 months, but because of their climate change policies, where they're walking away from Paris, as you say, and all the EPA regulations on climate, it means we will have a very long history in the future with these storms. And I think what's going to happen in the months ahead is if people can get flights out, you're going to see a massive permanent exodus out of Puerto Rico, out of the U.S. Virgin Islands. So, in fact, this is America's first illustration of climate refugees.
And gee, I wonder if there'll be a travel ban. Because he doesn't quite get that these are our citizens.
I don't know if we go that
way. I know. Yeah. Okay. I'm pushing the envelope here.
But this just goes
to show the thought process of this administration.
Well, when people get here, and there already was an exodus out of the islands because of the economy, but when people get here, they're going to need housing, they're going to need jobs, they're going to need schools. So it's, there are climate refugees all over the world, but now it is American citizens.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC. All right, here we go. We have a lot of letters, so we're going to get to those. And then at the top of the hour, we'll move on to other topics as well. So here we go. Jenny says, Judith, I love hearing you discuss the science of climate change. By the way, just a quick thing on the emails. Remember, keep them short, to the point. Because otherwise, we can't read them all anyway. And if you make them really long, then we really can't read them. Don't include links. And please, just proofread them. Because nouns and verbs, we like those.
They matter.
They help us understand what the hell you're trying to say.
Nouns and verbs matter.
We don't know. Yes. Jenny... She abided by every rule.
Good,
so we're gonna read.
Okay.
You're in, Jenny.
Judith, I love hearing you discuss the science of climate change and how this drives stronger hurricanes and storm surges. The public needs to know. In addition to the melting glaciers you mentioned a few weeks ago, you may want to remind people that global sea level rise also driven at the molecular level and by the thermal expansion of ocean water due to warmer air temperatures. You touched on that, but yes.
Yeah. I did shorthand on this. You're absolutely right, Jenny.
Virginia says, I don't understand why there are no helicopters rescuing isolated people and airdropping food and water and supplies in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. The sky was full of helicopters over Houston to lift people out of dangerous situations. Why not Puerto Rico?
I've been wondering myself, particularly on the isolated islands of Vieques and Culebra.
Where Lisa says why Trump isn't interested in Puerto Rico. No presidential election votes, no senators, black and brown skins, and no Trump resort and hotels. Thanks, Judith, for all you do, and safe travels. Christine says, my husband and I spent two wonderful weeks in Vieques and Calabria. We are heartsick over the devastation and the 45th president's lack of action. We visited two small museums while there and learned how quickly our U.S. Navy was very quick to use both of these paradises to test bombs. Both places have lingering environmental catastrophe.
Yeah. There's a great group on the ground in Vieques. One of those museums is run by the Vieques Historical and Conservation Trust. I don't know if that museum is still standing, but on the CNN report, I saw one of the environmental educators there, you know, not surprisingly, organizing on the ground. But it is going to take a lot for Vieques to come back. And remember, two-thirds of the island is loaded with unexploded ordnance. So EPA's got to get in there and make sure that a lot of that did not wash into the sea.
Well, we just had some kind of bomb wash up on a coast recently from the churning of the seas.
Yeah, well, that's nothing. Vieques has literally millions of projectiles, bullets, bombs. I've walked that land carefully a couple times. And a lot, when they were doing the bombing, fell directly into the sea. So when I left EPA, we were just getting the Navy to deal with that.
Janet writes, panel, why would islands that host millions of cruise ship tourists not have adequate infrastructure and services? Don't they contribute port fees? Well, my understanding is a lot of that was just severely damaged, right? That infrastructure
yes.
was destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is that the infrastructure are the resorts. The rest of the people live in abject poverty. So there isn't infrastructure.
Well, there true, but there is a rickety electrical grid, mm-hmm. and there are roads and there are hospitals. But these islands got hit with two really big hurricanes in less than 2 weeks. It's down.
And a rickety electrical grid.
Yeah.
You know, the resorts have their own generators.
Right.
Diesel. The hospitals should have their own generators.
Yeah.
Michael says maybe we should stop looking for people to blame and start concentrating our efforts on getting help to these people.
Yeah, that's why I'm going. Thanks, Michael.
Well, there's a
thanks,
little bit.
Thanks, Judy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an issue there. If the president is not doing what he ought to be doing, then he ought to be held accountable for not mm-hmm. doing that. So therefore, it seems to me that it isn't just a question of finger pointing, it's holding people responsible so that they'll behave better.
And I want to emphasize, we are in the beginning of this crisis. This is not over. And I apologize if this sounds like finger pointing. It is an effort, as Alan says, to hold the administration accountable. But this is going to get much worse in the weeks ahead. And so when people say, I feel so helpless, what can I do? You can call your member of Congress, for instance, and say, what are you doing to push this administration to be more responsive?
Democrats were doing that yesterday on Capitol Hill. I heard a member of Congress who had just returned from Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And was being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer yesterday afternoon. And Wolf Blitzer was talking about the what you were mentioning earlier about the dialysis and mm-hmm. insulin and so forth. And he said, eventually, over the next couple of days, people are going to start dying. And she said to him, Wolf, what you don't understand is people are already
yes.
dying.
Was that Nydia Velasquez?
Yes.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's Puerto Rican. A number of elected officials wanted to fly down to Puerto Rico this weekend. And according to the Washington Post, FEMA canceled their flights. They were going to go on government planes, but FEMA's not allowing our representatives to travel there on government planes this weekend.
Well, they'll have to fly for the business class.
Well, if you can get in, it's hard to get flights.
Right. I mean, I understand why people want to go, but then there's the security and the other part of the problems when people like elected officials go. People who need to go are the ones who are going to be boots on the ground and actually help.
Yeah, totally agree. But I appreciate that Governor mm-hmm. Cuomo went.
Yep.
And I think members of Congress have to get there to sense the urgency.
I'm certainly with you on that, Judy. There is no question that people begin to move when on the House floor and the Senate floor, people, again, hold them accountable
mm-hmm.
for what they're doing. So I think that it is crucial that they get down there. And while I'm on the subject, I really do want to give some plaudits to CNN. You know, I watch CNN a lot, and they are doing a magnificent job of following up here. I think part of the American conscience or consciousness on this is the fact that they have a firsthand view of all of this. And I think CNN deserves a lot of credit.
Completely agree. And I wish Fox would cover this more because we'd get, I mean, this, I'm just desperate here. If Fox covered it more, we'd get a better response.
But they're playing to their base.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that we mentioned
that we've already talked about.
Which is interesting because the president has already made remarks about how Puerto Rico was broke. And we know that that's true. And we know that that's true. So he's afraid that if they do anything to alleviate this catastrophe, somehow Puerto Rico will not have to pull up its socks and do this. This is basically what he's saying. It's an extraordinary thing to be saying.
And many hedge funds hold debt in Puerto Rico. They refinanced the public utility, and the president's earliest words were about how Wall Street will have their debt taken care of.
Back to the letters, Lee says, even if he may not believe it, a statement as simple as we must all pull together to help our fellow Americans in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands could go a long way toward making friends and influencing people. Saul says, in regard to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, I'd say what is missing is an all-out push from the Trump administration, basically a lack of day-to-day addressing of problems. And in addition, the president's travel ban should apply to Tom Price and to all those in the administration who plan on profiting from their positions. Andrew says, if there is no one to hold the president and his family and his cabinet accountable for their conflicts of interest and violations of the law, why do we think that there will be any true ramifications to his ignoring Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands and allowing those citizens he disdains simply to die? If you ask the president, I'm sure there's fault here, quote, on both sides.
Yeah.
A good point. At what will stick to this president?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Judith.
I don't know. I mean, this is you know, lives in the balance, and his early tweeting was very peculiar on Puerto Rico. Alan, what do you think?
Well, no, I'm fascinated by the idea that Donald Trump doesn't care about anything but the base.
Right.
You know, from the very beginning, traditionally, presidents say, OK, I got this much. Now, in order to win re-election, I got to get the rest of the people. He doesn't seem to give a damn. And the Puerto Rican experience falls right into that. So he's convinced that his early political success, in other words, being elected president, is all you need to know. And that the same people who elected him president will elect him president a second time.
Yeah.
And it may be.
Roger writes, as yet largely unstated, it is likely that perhaps one third of the population will migrate, at least temporarily, back to family along the East Coast. In particular, our cities in Florida and historically New York State cities prepared for this mass migration of American environmental refugees.
Yeah, it's not going to be that mass, but it's 3.5 million people live in Puerto Rico, 110,000 in the U.S. Virgin Islands. People are really clamoring to get out, and I think it's going to be years if they return, if at all.
All right.
Go ahead, Alan. I was just
going
to say, I hate to do this, but my mom was somebody who really believed in integrating Puerto Ricans in the 1950s, the 1940s, the 1950s, and set up all kinds of organizations to do that. Her closest friend was the Undersecretary of State, I believe, America Pagan de Colón, and we had people in the house all the time. There were theater parties with West Side Story again and again and again, because Leonard Bernstein paid a lot of attention to that. And I keep thinking that we may see some of that a second time.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, when you look at the situation overall, and I think you made this point earlier, Judith, is that we're just at the beginning of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the very, very beginning. It's only a week, right? A week old. So We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will move on to other topics. We do welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be back after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Judith Enck is with us, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok, and we welcome your letters again, panel at WAMC.org. We've been spending time talking about the situation in Puerto Rico as well as the U.S. Virgin Islands. We want to get to some other issues, though, and let us talk for a moment about the tax break story. We talked about this yesterday, a day after it was unveiled. And now, as some of the dust is starting to clear and more questions are being asked, Republicans' release of a sweeping plan to rewrite the tax code has set off a scramble among Washington lobbyists and trade groups to protect valuable tax breaks and other long ingrained provisions. The plan's scant details makes it hard to know what exactly is on the chopping block. But within hours of the plan's unveiling on Wednesday, flashpoints emerged over measures that supporters said could hurt the housing market, raise borrowing costs, and increase the tax burden on families in high-tax states. The response put Trump administration officials on the defensive as they embark on a campaign to sell that plan. The lobbyists shouldn't have input, but the people in Congress should have input, and we'll be working with them closely as we turn this into a bill and get it to the president to sign this year. That is what Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, said on Fox Business Network on Thursday. Alan.
Well, first of all, you know, I have this image of K Street, which runs, you know, right into Pennsylvania Avenue, as I remember it. And that's where all the lobbyists hang out in their dens. I have this image in my mind. I'm sure it's going to be a New Yorker cartoon of people running out of the lobbyists with their briefcases, running out of these buildings. This is going to be a huge boon, believe it or not, for the lobbyists, because when they're threatened, that's when they make their money. So they'll be out there. And for Mnuchin to say, you know, this is we're not for the lobbyists, forget about it. Now, this was all done.
You scared me a little bit there, Alan. Go ahead.
Of course, I was making a sound. You mean?
Yeah, that's what it's fine.
Speaking of sounds, I just have to say, I know it's a diversion, and I apologize. But when Ray was reading the story, I guess you guys weren't listening. You were talking to each other. But when Ray was reading the story about Paul Revere's cousin and his outhouse near and Ray is the most professional newsman I know. And all of a sudden there were these stops in his talking because it was clear he was falling over the table.
He
thought it was the funniest thing that he'd ever heard. They're, archaeologically, they're going to be looking in the outhouse. So
and what are they going to find?
We've been caught.
We were taking selfies during the break.
That was as good as it gets. But then this whole business about having done this whole bill in secret and with only enough so that you let out a certain amount of information that you think will be attractive to a lot of people. Now, there is this thing which is going to save millions of dollars for Trump called the alternative minimum tax, the AMT. Well, it was supposed to be a thing that got only the rich people, but because people began to make more money because it was worth less, what would happen is a lot of people in the middle class got trapped into the AMT, the alternative minimum tax. Right. And so it's extraordinarily unpopular. So that one they let out, and it just so happens to also be helping Trump magnificently, because he can't get around that AMT. It'll save him millions of dollars. So the fact is that the secretiveness of this, of the health care bill, of working in the dark of night and not letting anybody know what's going on, and this is where the press corps and everybody else come into play, because they go around and they figure out who it's really going to cost. And that's why they won't release the information they have to release, because if they do, then people will get wise.
Judith. Libby, do you want next?
I just think this is an affront on the middle class. If there ever was an attack, this is it. You know, I pay my taxes every year. And we go to our accountant and, you know, do our deal. And the fact that we, under this plan, would no longer be able to
deduct
our mortgage interest, right, or our local and state taxes.
It's, wait. Libby, you're telling us that what they're saying is a lie, that you can deduct your mortgage interest? They're saying that's not going to be touched.
I don't know about that, because I keep reading different things. I mean,
the real estate
lobby is up in arms around.
Well,
this.
That's because of the state and local tax deduction. In other words,
our property taxes. So if I wasn't able, even that, if we're not able to deduct our property taxes, you know, that will impact the housing market, and it'll impact people like us who are middle income wage earners, and pay our taxes every year and look forward to getting a little bit back and not having to pay more. So, you know, this is just an attack on the middle class and so they didn't get Obamacare. So where are they going to pay for all this? Where's all the money coming from?
Well, that's right. That's right. It's based on a false premise,
right,
which is we're going to make, this is going to be so successful that the American standards will go up to 3.5% from 1% or 1.5%. That's nonsense. We know it's nonsense. Every economist tells you it's nonsense. So they don't really have a way of paying it. To me, the real question is, will anybody give a damn? In other words, that's a level of sophistication on the part of our voters that has to be very important.
Right, because when they say they're going to double the standard deduction, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I predict this is not going to pass. I think
really,
with state and local tax, if that piece on not deducting state and local taxes stays in there, Republicans in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, California, they're not going to be able to go along with this, because the math is going to be so easy. Their opponents are going to be able to do a little calculator. If you did your house is worth this much, you deduct this much, your incumbent Congress member just cost you blank amount of money. But I think, you know, the plan for the Trump administration was to get health care out of the way rapidly and then shift to this. They thought health care was going to be easy. I think this is much harder for them to pass than health care.
But health care was going to pay for this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
they don't have the trillions
to pay for it.
Yeah.
Seeing that everybody on the panel is so much smarter than I am, I hate to do this.
Go ahead.
But I am not so sure. I mean, I'm not so sure that Americans will get past what they consider to be good for them in this bill and go to the long-term consequences. That's what I'm concerned about. And I think that there's a very good chance that they won't, and that this is a much easier haul for the Trumpistas, then healthcare, where 23 million Americans were going to lose something. I think you'd have to point out in a very sophisticated manner to people over this tax bill that they will, in the long run, lose something because we are spending so much money that the debt will go up and everything else. That's a very hard concept to teach.
Well, I think we should take it very seriously. We shouldn't ignore it, but I stand by my original
flamboyant statement that I don't think it's going to run through Congress. And by the way, Judith, why, if you look ahead, six steps ahead or two steps ahead, as Mario used to say, why don't you think, because the blue states are so angry about this, Cuomo says, Andrew says that this is going to bankrupt the state.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why not compromise on that one, too? I mean, after all, you can't pay for it anyway. So why not add one more deduction and say, okay, then pass the thing?
And can I be really, really cynical on this whole conversation? And this is very little that I have to interject on this. But the track record here with this House and Senate is not great of doing anything right.
Right.
I mean, we seem to be in a rut as to being able to figure out. I mean, even if our politically and we have deep differences, mm-hmm, they just don't seem to procedurally be able to do anything correct.
They spent 8 years in opposition without having to govern, and now they don't know what to do anymore.
So I agree with you, Alan. I mean, I think there is a chance, but you do wonder of just given the what seems to be an aptitude all the way around of if you keep going after other things, are you going to have your act together to do this?
I don't want to repeat myself, but if in fact the whole thing is a cynical ploy, if as Judith and Libby have pointed out, we can't pay for it, and you have, Joe, we can't pay for it because we didn't get the money from health care. They didn't get the money
right.
from health care. And they are double dealing as they as Republicans. I'm sorry, it's not only Trump have always done it. Ronald Reagan certainly did it. Said trickle down will work because this infusion will make it work. It mm-hmm. didn't work, right. and it's not going to work this time. They know it. And the real question is, will the American people say, I got my piece of chocolate, that's enough?
Mm-hmm. So not to belabor the point, but do you think the public seem to be smarter on health care these last couple times?
Yeah, because the 23 million people are going to lose their health care.
But I think millions more will wind up paying more taxes.
But it'll be after the fact.
Yeah,
it'll
right.
That's
right.
the problem.
Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. yeah. And yeah. then people are going to have to look forward.
Right, they'll go, "Oh my God, what did I do?"
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to another story as we wind down here, and let's talk about. I'll admit this is a Judith Enk request story, which is Tom Price trying to deflect anger over chartered flights. Well, now he's going to pay up, sort of. After being rebuked by President Trump for racking up at least $400,000 in travel and chartered flights, Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price said on Thursday that he would pay back taxpayers, and here's the line, for his part, and stop flying on, right, his sole seat on and stop flying on private jets. But that does not mean his job is safe. Mr. Trump has grown incensed by Mr. Price's liberal renting of expensive planes, which he views as undercutting his Drain the Swamp campaign. That, according to several administration officials, and I've heard varying reports on this. CNN was reporting last night that the president had said that the job was safe and he just wanted to make a point. They're also concerned because there have been so many other members mm-hmm. of the administration mm-hmm. who have come under fire for the exact same thing, that they didn't want to make too much out of this.
Yeah. Well, the candy store is open. That's clear.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people thought that this is okay. Anything is okay that we could do. We can do this with impunity. Now, you are so right, Joe. I mean, the first thing we heard was that the original bill, forget about the international trip, which cost another $500,000. The original bill was something like $450,000. Am I wrong about that, guys?
No.
That's about it. And that he was going to write a check. And I said, holy cow, this guy must have a lot of money if he can write a check for $450,000 and not think twice about it. And then out comes this other thing about the international trip, which is another $500,000. And then we find out that what he really wants to do is give back for his, quote, seat. There was no one else on the plane. What do you mean a seat? The pilot seat? The co-pilot seat? Who else is going to be he's going to pay $50,000 as opposed to the $450,000? But when people aren't stupid, they get that.
And this comes right after the whole Mnuchin,
Fort Knox
and the solar eclipse trip.
The wife's social media.
Right,
and
all of that. Yeah, so, yeah. Judith.
Yeah, so, Alan is right. He's going to pay for his seat, but that's ridiculous because it's the cost of the whole plane. Since May, Secretary Price has spent $1 million on these private planes. And also, he's been using government planes for trips that he's gone on with his wife. Presumably, he's going for health conferences. But why do you need to take a military plane to listen to this itinerary? First, he went to Berlin. Then he went to Geneva, you know, all separate trips. Beijing, Ho Chi Minh City, Tokyo, and Liberia. This guy really gets around.
Yeah, he certainly does. And he's supposed to be taking care of our health.
Right, right. And I think the dilemma for the president, and he said what you stated, Joe, he also, when asked yesterday, is Price going to survive it? He said what my mom, Helen Enck, used to say all the time, we'll see. But if the president gets rid of Price for this, he's got other people in his cabinet who have frequent flyer private jet problems. Ryan Zinke has used private jets, and EPA's own Scott Pruitt has used private planes a lot. You mentioned Mnuchin. Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, used a lot of private planes in the Caribbean. And I think it would be nice if these guys would fly back to the Caribbean and help with hurricane relief.
They could take a private plane for that.
You know, I'm interested in what you're saying, Judith, and I love having you on, and I sure hope you can find a telephone for the next couple of weeks.
I'll try.
That operates. But you, of course, were a civil servant.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some thinking here that there is that this information that we're now getting about these flights comes out of the bowels of the civil service.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is get even. I mean, after all, you went into the civil service to help people. I'm not talking about you individually, although that certainly is true. And now you see that your agency has been taken over by demons, and you have an opportunity to throw a little something into the mix, and you do it. I suspect that's what's going on. That's how we're finding all this stuff out.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And interestingly, last week, I know at my old agency, at EPA, they had a mandatory anti-leak training. And and also at other agencies
right now.
And right after the anti-leak training, information came out of EPA, who knows where, that Administrator Pruitt had spent $25,000 building a soundproof room in his office. And the details of that story were amazing. And I think it came from someone on the inside who was personally.
Was it padded?
It's a padded room. It's like a phone booth.
It's a padded room.
It's a padded room.
And I don't think it's to do radio interviews. I think it's he wants a secure line.
It's Nixon to the 25th power.
Yeah, I mean, at $25,000. Yeah. And the contractor doing it, I know this seems frivolous, but he spoke in detail like this has never happened at any other federal agency and they want it customized. And you can just kind of guess how that story got out there.
All right, we are out of time, except for a minute. Then I'm going to give Alan to do a last-minute push here for the Harry Belafonte tickets for November 11th, helping out the Lockbox. This is Alan Chartok interviewing Harry Belafonte at the Egg on Saturday, November 11th at 7:30. $150 for a pair of tickets. The money goes into the Lockbox. Go, Alan.
It's going to be an historic event. You're not going to want to turn around to your grandchildren or your children and say, were you there when Harry Belafonte, that legend, was talking at the Egg? And by the way, a big thank you to Peter Lesser. Right, Joe, for
yep.
helping us out in this of
absolutely.
The Egg. He's a real hero of ours, and he's been wonderful. Look, folks, the Lockbox is what's important. The contribution is terrific. It's $150 for two seats. But really, in the end, if everybody who's listening to me right now, I mean this, if everybody, come on now, if everybody was listening to me right now, would go to WAMC.org and say, hey, here's my $5 or here's my $1,000, and we will love you because you are so good.
And from what I understand in the front office, the tickets are going crazy. So if you want them, do it now.
I'll bet.
WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, and go to zero. But if you want to get it done really quick, just go to WAMC.org and go to the Lockbox, and it's in the drop-down menu. Alan, have a great weekend.
You
and
too,
Joe. Take care of yourself. Judith, we wish you safe travels. Thank you so much for doing the beautiful work that you're doing. And we look forward to hearing from you. We'll keep in touch with you as
Thanks,
much
Joe.
As we can.
Yep.
Thank you. Travel safe. Libby, we'll see you Monday.
Yes. And to everybody tonight,
have
an easy fast tonight. And Alan, have a contemplative Yom Kippur.
I get the message.
Thank you.
There's so much subtext in the show. We'll be back after this.